What ended up happening is like my dreams definitely, I felt like the corporate world was sucking my passion and dreams out of what I was doing.
Sure.
So I'm not saying it's not for some people. Some people may thrive and love that environment, that structure. But to me, I kind of felt like I was in the wrong spot in life. Like I was doing well for a company, but I didn't feel like, I just felt like they could find someone else that could work hard and do that and be good at it. But, you know, I had this other calling that the world was kind of tugging at me.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody, to Rochester Business Connections on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Mike DiCiocio. Mike, what's good, man? I'm excited to be here with you.
What's going on, brother? I'm honored to be here. You know, you're a name that has come up numerous times in the last, I'd say, 18 months of, hey, do you know Ben? Hey, do you know Ben? Ben from Rochester? And then I'm like, Balbert? Like, I know that. I know that Balbert Marketing. And then I put two and two together, Ben Albert. And so then we originally connected. I forget who, I always like to give credit where it's due, but it, like I said, it was like three or four different people had brought your name up. So I feel like this has been waiting to happen.
Dude, I've been
all arrows pointing in this direction of us connecting. So thank you so much for having me on.
Well, obviously this segment is Rochester Business Connections, and I'm doing something very similar to what you're doing. I mean, you're crushing it in the Buffalo, New York region. Mm-hmm. And I've been looking forward to this interview because for me, you're going to kind of be preaching to the choir. We were kind of riffing for 20 minutes before we started here.
Yeah.
But the power of podcasting, the power of networking and being a social chameleon. I mean, you're the owner and founder of Social Chameleon. You're the producer, host, the everything at Mic'd Up Podcast. And you're a kick-ass dude. So where should we start? Well, we can start with Social Chameleon because to my understanding, it has a different form than when you first started the concept. What is a social chameleon? What's the name mean? What do you do? Take it anywhere you'd like. Tell us about Social Chameleon.
Awesome, brother. Thank you so much again for this opportunity. And shout out to all my Rochester buddies and friends out there and in Buffalo as well. Buffalo Love and Rock City, right? Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, original connection, I think it might have been Dave Mamano. You know Dave Mamano as well, right?
So that
could be Dave's actually part of my story, which I'll share in a minute on how I got into podcasting. But I wanted to let you know, because you mentioned that I'm killing it in Buffalo, and I appreciate you saying that. But actually, in the last 18 to 24 months, I've kind of scaled outside of Buffalo. It was a little bit unintentional, just doing a lot of virtual networking throughout the pandemic. And my connections weren't coming from my backyard anymore. Like, you know, I used to do a lot more in-person, face-to-face, shake your hand networking in both Buffalo and Rochester when I was hanging out with Dave and the Avanti Entrepreneur Network. So naturally, a lot of my clients in the early days were Buffalo and Rochester. But then it became, funny enough, I have more clients in Florida right now than I do in New York State.
Wow.
So that just by chance. I think it's because I built up a little bit of a network down there. So that's kind of the story about reaching more people, as I just done a ton of virtual networking, even pre-pandemic. It was a great way to meet new people. But yeah, Social Chameleon, man, I'd love to share how we started, why we came up with the name. And when I say we, the early days, it was me, myself, and I. That was Social Chameleon.
Yes.
The name came from an idea of actually being a salesperson first. So before I became an entrepreneur, which happened in 2017, We're coming up on 5 years. So I'm not sure when this comes out, but November 22nd of 2022 will be our 5 year anniversary. So I'm super stoked about that. But 2017 became an entrepreneur. Previous to that, I had about a decade plus of sales experience, everything from Liberty Mutual Insurance, like knock, knock, calling you up on the phone or showing up to sit down at your kitchen table and review life, auto, and home insurance. I did that game for about 4 years. And also I sold Sleep Number beds at a high level. I was winning a lot of awards selling high ticket retail, became a store manager and at Sleep Number as well. So did really well for both of those companies. And I had a couple other stints with like local music stores. I'm a drummer, so I always love talking music and gear and stuff. So I had a really cool local music job when I was in my early 20s. But why do I share all that? Because you asked me where Chameleon comes from. And when somebody one time asked me, like, what do you think makes you a successful salesperson? It just came to me automatically. I thought of the word chameleon because I can work with, like, I think if at the music store, like this guy comes in and he's like a grunge rocker and we can start talking about Pearl Jam, Nirvana, STP, and we're just connecting. We're vibing. We're talking about gear, amps, drums, everything. Mic placement, you know, we're having a blast. And then 25 minutes later, a grandma comes in because little Billy's taking his first guitar lesson. I'm not just going to be like, I'm still Mike. I'm still genuine, but she's going to get a version of me that's kind of coming in with a little bit different care for, oh, this is so cool. He's getting his first guitar lesson and I will have a genuine conversation with her in the moment. So I kind of explained it. Like, I think that's why I get along with a lot of people. And I'm kind of like a chameleon where I can adapt to my environment really quickly in a way that best serves them. And I said it twice. I'm going to say it a third time, being genuine, because it's not like trying to manipulate someone and put this fake face on, because that's obviously not healthy for anybody. But I just think, and we kind of joked off camera, I think of it like when you're, I use the example of an 18-year-old going off to college, like the 18-year-old that hangs out with their buddies at college and comes home at the Thanksgiving dinner are like two different people. I just use that as an example because it kind of shows like, you know, diversity in personalities or whatever, but a range in personalities. But that's what I mean, like having that range. So you can do that out on the sales floor. I actually learned at Sleep Number, it's kind of interesting. I fought this for a while. I didn't like the idea of being everybody put into four categories. I'm like, no, that's not how life is. People are humans. You can't put them in boxes. But then I kind of was like, all right, let me see if the system works. It's kind of like a quarterback. Like they want to come into the league and just sling the pigskin and do whatever they want. Or are they going to listen to the offensive coordinator who's been doing it for 50 years, successful, plug and play with successful quarterbacks. And then like you come in and say, no, I'm going to do it my way. So I kind of was like, let me see what this is all about. So the four categories were director. It's called the Platinum Rule, by the way. Okay. It's an actual thing. So the everybody listening to this has heard of the Golden Rule, which is treat everybody the way that you'd want to be treated. I'm kind of butchering it, but that's the theory behind it. Platinum is treat people the way that they want to be treated. That's a whole different ballgame, right? And so, Ben, if you came into my store and you were real quick, dude, you didn't have time. You were just getting out of work. You're busy. You got another meeting. You're looking for a pillow, right? I was working at Sleep Number. You're coming in. I would work with you and talk to you. But if I knew that you're like, dude, I want a great pillow. I'm looking for something like this. I would work with you in your style, sell you the pillow, you know, talk about everything that's important for you to know, return policy, anything you need to know, get you on your way, fist bump and on to the next one. But then Sally comes in 5 minutes later and she needs to try it out. She wants to lay down. She wants to try it in every neck angle because she just had neck surgery. She had a car accident 2 years ago. And now my conversation with her is a lot different because she's more of a relator. So there's, you know, there's director, relator, socializer, and analyzer. I'm kind of more of the analytical thinker. When I go buy a car, sure. I want to know like all the different, you know, buttons and bells and whistles and stuff. Some people are not like that. What happens is, and this is a total tangent, but I think it's important for everybody who's in business listening to this anywhere in the world. What happens is, and you could disagree with me, by the way, if people say this is bullshit, fine. Like, but I've used this system and it's really worked. and this is a shout out to Sleep Number because they're the ones who taught me this in training. But what happens is you start to, if you go in the other direction, like go back to Ben coming in with the pillow, you got 5 minutes and you're just a director and you don't want small talk. And I start schmoozing you and talking, hey, the Buffalo Bills are starting up next week, you know, because you got a Bills jacket on and you're just like, this guy is just not selling me this pillow. He's just talking about everything else. Oh, and you know, like my girlfriend got in a car accident. So let me tell you why this pillow is so good. And you're just like, well, I don't, yeah, I just, can I buy it now? Right now you may actually leave and come back on your next lunch break and buy it from another person.
Sure.
And people have done that. I used to sell stuff to people and I'm not trying to say I'm not trying to blow up my ego here, but I was very successful there. Because, you know, my close rate was about 75%. Every time I showed I called it a proposal. Everybody else called it a quote. There's a reason for that language difference too. Mm-hmm. But when you show someone and you present it and you do a world-class presentation, and you give them all the reasons that it's the right option. And then you actually put it on paper and show them like, this is what it would be. And you can, you know, more so that was like with a purchase of a mattress, not a pillow. We wouldn't do a proposal on a pillow, but my point is, you know, you gave them the experience, you showed it to them, and then you brought them through the process. And if you're actually thinking about someone's language and their body language, and are they, you know, an analytical thinker, a socializer, someone who's a relator, they really need that connection, mm-hmm. or are they a director? When you kind of hammer that out, you just set yourself up for the best chance. Just like in sports, like if you work on your batting stance and your swing, your chance to hit a home run improves, and it's a slight adjustment. It could be words you're saying. It could be eye contact, body language. It all goes into a great sales presentation. So I learned that for, like I said, about a dozen years. I felt I was getting really great at it. And then how did I get into Social Chameleon? Told you the idea where Chameleon came from. But Social Chameleon started as a media and marketing company in 2017 here in Buffalo, New York, where I'm currently located. And the reason for that is to connect back to my roots. So previous to my whole sales career and all that good stuff, I was I loved really two things, music and film. Mm-hmm. I was going to say movies, but that's kind of slang for film. Film sounds more proper. Like, I know what I'm talking about. He said film. No, some music. I was a drummer ever since I was 10, 11 years old, banging on pots and pans when I was a youngster to eventually getting my first kit and everything. Played all the way through my late teens into my 20s. And then I also loved watching movies and taking in like the whole cinematography aspect of it and the art and entertainment side of it. So not so much like I can tell you how movies and music make me feel, but I couldn't tell you the lyrics to my favorite songs. And I couldn't, like, up until I was probably 20 years old, didn't even fully pay attention to like all of the screenwriting in movies. It was more so you can almost mute the TV and know if a movie felt good to me. Because the editing decisions, how long it holds on someone's face. Do they show the creature in an alien movie the entire time ripping people's heads off? Or is it you don't see it almost at all and that makes it more scary, right? Less is more. So I was studying a lot of guys like Spielberg, M. Night Shyamalan in his earlier days. I really liked like what he did with Sixth Sense and Signs. I rewatched it back decades later and I have a couple problems with some of the stylings that he's done, but I'm talking about his less is more theory. I really kind of appreciated. And so I just was always into, you know, that kind of entertainment thing. Went to Buffalo State for media production, not initially. I'll share a quick story on that. So okay. I was going to Buff State to be an educator. Mm. I wanted to make a difference in kids' lives actually because of teacher when I was 15 years old in high school, freshman year, algebra. Up to that point in my life, I thought I was just pretty much average. And I just assumed I was average because I'm the youngest of three kids. My sister, the oldest, smart, top 50 student, early acceptance in college, went to Damon, you know, blew it out of the water at Damon, became a teacher. My brother, barely passing, stand-up comedian, goofball. School was just a thing you had to go to for him. Where am I? I'm in the middle. I'm kind of smart, goofy. I show up on time. Like I show up to school with a good attitude. I had just a good attitude. That's kind of was my way of getting through life. But I would get like 80s. But I didn't know that I was able of getting high 90s until this ninth grade math teacher took me aside after class and showed me that it was making sense. Like she was making it click. At the end of the year, you know this because you're in New York State, we have Regents exams. I don't even know if that's true anymore in 2022, but we did then.
Yeah, not sure.
And it actually meant something, Ben. You'd say, oh, I got a good grade on a Regents exam. And you would kind of like put that in your resume because that was important. And I got a 94, and this teacher, Miss Pelutro at the time, before, or she was Miss Gorlewski. She now married Mrs. Pelutro. Somehow she ends up listening to this. she'll know that she's meant a lot to me over the years because
yes,
I remember coming home from school, walking out my driveway at my parents' house. My mom's in the garage, like she just got off the phone. She's like, I just got off the phone with your teacher. And I'm like, what did I do today? I don't remember getting in trouble today. I don't remember doing anything wrong. She goes, no, man, you got a 94 in your Regents exam. And I just was like, that was because that teacher was awesome. Like she spent that time. So for a long time, I had that, like it, the way the teacher connects with each individual student is so important. And so I decided to go to Buff State to be a teacher. And I think that's important for anyone who's interested in being a teacher, educator in some way. Those connections are so important. So obviously today I'm not a school teacher, but if I was, I would have went and done math and done it like at an early elementary level to help kids connect with their, you know, potential and greatness early and really yeah. build them up so they can go through. But guess what? After I took that math class, after that, I was getting 90s in math after. And in college, I was like a 3.33, which isn't huge, you know, it's not 4.0, but 3.33 is way better than I would have gotten, I think,
sure.
before that experience. So my mindset started to change. My belief in myself started to change. I stopped being the sibling that was just trying to fit in this gray area, and I started to become my own self. I was drumming. I was playing out at clubs with my friends on the weekends. I was doing like short little movies with my buddies, you know. We didn't have any like great technology, but back in the day, like I sound like I'm that old, I'm 36, but back in my early days of like the late 80s, early 90s, I was recording on VHS tapes that you'd pop in the camcorder. Remember the shoulder cams? So I don't know if I'm a couple of years older than you, but
no, I remember. Yeah.
So that's how I was like, you know, keeping myself entertained. I have to say, like, I feel like I'm on like almost privileged in a way to be in that in the generation that I'm in, because being born mid to late 80s, you saw so much transition. Mm-hmm. Like we had a record player when I was a kid. I knew how to use it. We had a cassette player. Whenever I asked for like, hey, can I buy an album? I was buying it on cassette. Like the Weezer Blue album I had on cassette, 1994. I was 8. Listening to Weezer Blue.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge influence in like early grunge. Then I started to get that on CDs. Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know how I got this past my mom, but I got Evil Empire by Rage Against the Machine, you know, like, which obviously has some language on it. But we'd go to Media Play, and every time you went, if you did good, you would pick out a new CD. We got Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, all good stuff, Chili Peppers, and it's, a lot of that's my roots and my favorite stuff today. So I kind of grew up in this, like I love music. I love the way film made me feel as well. And I knew I wanted to do something with it. But that experience had me, when someone said, what do you want to do with your life? I knew in Buffalo, if I wanted to do something in media and I searched around about it, it was always like go work at the news station, tell somebody it's snowing out or that the Bills won or lost. At that time, it was a lot of losing. And I just didn't have an interest in being on the news or being behind a camera at the news fetching coffee. So I didn't pursue it. It kind of like, you have to move to New York or move to LA. Mm-hmm. And both of those things crossed my mind. And I knew that I'd have to save for about 10 summers before I can afford an apartment at either of those locations compared to Buffalo, which is not to say don't dream. You know, I was ready to do that. But where my story changed a little bit is I went to Buff State as an elementary school teacher. And about 6 months in, I was doing well. And my advisor, you have that like mid-semester check-in. And she's just like, hey, how you doing? Where do you want to be? Like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What are you going to do with the degree that you're pursuing right now? And I just told her the kind of the story I just told you. Like my brother and I would, with our camera, we would like reenact movies and we'd write screenplays when we were 10 years old. And she kind of felt the energy. And she told me something that's funny that I actually didn't like at the time. I don't think I ever shared this. she said, oh, I can see you actually being like on radio, kind of like Howard Stern. Now, back when I was like 18, 19, hearing this information, I didn't listen to Howard back then or have any appreciation. All I knew is like he always would have like Playboy models on his show and like he was talking out of his, you know, butt on TV. Like he was just this weird guy that I just thought was like, that's what you got out of this conversation. I was like, you missed the mark.
The first time I saw Howard Stern, it was a hemorrhoid competition where they were showing hemorrhoids.
Oh God.
Like, it's like
they were showing it on TV.
It was blurred out, but yeah. I didn't even know what a hemorrhoid was. I was like young in my teens.
You're like, yeah.
Who is this guy, this radio guy with this gross?
So I think he was definitely more raunchy back then. But when she said it, I just didn't appreciate it. Cause like now I'm not saying I'm a square and I don't laugh at like, you know, some humor that may be a little out there, but it just was weird. I didn't say anything about radio, but it's funny now that I actually have a podcast that kind of have, it's like online radio that didn't even exist back then. So maybe she was seeing a vision of for myself that I didn't even know was there, but she actually was right. But the funny part of it is once she told me or heard my story, and then she started to talk about like there's film classes you can take and screenwriting, and there's a studio in the basement of one of the buildings. And she pointed through a window and was like, that brick building right there has a television, film, and arts studio in the basement. I'm pretty sure she turned back around and I was gone. Like I just was out signing up for every class on, they had a thing called Saber. You'd go online and you'd sign up for your classes on Saber.
Okay.
So that's how I made my transition. And then I pursued, I got my degree in media production. And then after 4 years, got my bachelor's and I was like, now what do I do? And my option at that time was to either stay in Buffalo and work at a news station, like I said. I already told you what I thought about that. And the other option was going to LA. Now, I had an uncle who was a big influence for me because he's also from Buffalo. He's also a drummer. So I kind of looked up to him as a drummer. And he had a drum set that I inherited. And it was a really nice Gretsch drum set when I was a kid.
Beautiful.
And once he knew I was taking lessons and summer lessons, and I took drum lessons all the way throughout school year, like starting in fifth grade, he eventually let me inherit that. Like it wasn't something he's like, yeah, go bang on my $3,000 drum set like when you're 10 years old. But he saw that I was taking it seriously. He even bought me a nice Zildjian crash cymbal for Christmas one year. So he kind of was an encourager of like pursuing the drums. But he also moved from Buffalo to LA to pursue sound engineering. Like he's behind the big boards recording orchestral music. And originally he was doing that, just recording orchestras all across the country, just like large. He would go into New York City. He'd be in London recording. And a lot of times it was simply to record symphonies for, you know, to release an album or something. But then because he got really good at recording symphonies and large orchestras, and he's in LA, he started to do that professionally. His first movie that like you and I would know or anyone listening is going to recognize the title of was Daredevil with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
So he gets Daredevil and that was like 99, 2000 and his career takes off. He ends up doing like the Planet of the Apes series. He does the new Star Wars reboots, some of them. He was working on just a bunch of like really big, like the new Rocky movie. You know, like Rocky did one or two extra movies after the core Rocky series, Clint Eastwood. So I got to see my uncle go from being a guy in Buffalo that was a drummer with like a dream to record music, go out there. Like he started recording bands before the big orchestra and he made a career for himself and he's still doing it today. He's a rock star out there, like in his domain. He gets called up to work on these major motion pictures. So I knew like, okay, I could maybe do that, but do my own version of it. I was considering being like behind the camera, maybe. And also I loved editing. I loved storytelling visually and like the way that you can take images and move them around. If you had 10 3-second clips and you rearrange them, you could tell like 10 different stories. And that was super interesting to me. So he told me, he's like, Mike, if you want to come out here and try to make it, know your editing software inside and out. So if you did come out here and you're sleeping on a couch and you're fetching coffee for 6 months and somebody like is late by 20 minutes for production and they need you to start editing something and you sit behind the keys, you could do it.
Yeah.
So I was ready. I had a plane ticket. I think my bags may have been half packed. and I was ready to go out to LA. I was also in a serious relationship though. And my girlfriend at the time was like, well, you can go if you want. I'm not going to hold you back. But I knew that that meant like it was going to be super straining on a relationship.
Yeah.
So, and we ended up getting engaged and eventually married. So I decided to stay in Buffalo. This is where Social Chameleon comes in. And we were together for about 10 years total. And we were married for 6 of them. And we have a beautiful daughter, Isabel, together, who's now 7 years old. She was born in 2015. But in 2017, what did I say happens? Remember, Social Chameleon started in 2017. I was divorced in 2017. My life kind of was building up to this thing. I was successful in business. No, those are the years I was like music, from Music Store into Sleep Number into selling insurance and really doing well in business. And as I'm going through my journey, I'm like, you know, providing for the family, doing kind of the American dream thing. And when that was all, I never compromised like in a way where my wife came to me and said, Mike, I don't want you to pick up a camera. Don't pick up drumsticks. Like she would come and watch the shows. She never seemed super into it, but she would at least come to support when I was playing and stuff. So there was no like intentional compromise, but what ended up happening is like my dreams definitely, I felt like the corporate world was sucking my passion and dreams out of what I was doing.
Sure.
So I'm not saying it's not for some people. Some people may thrive and love that environment, that structure. But to me, I kind of felt like I was in the wrong spot in life. Like I was doing well for a company, but I didn't feel like, I just felt like they could find someone else that could work hard and do that and be good at it. But, you know, I had this other calling that the world was kind of tugging at me.
Mm.
And once I got divorced, it was like, all right, man, you kind of like compromised in a way on all these other things.
Sure.
And it didn't work out.
Right.
So now, bro, you're not compromising anymore. And I looked myself in the mirror and I was like, dude, who do you want to be? And I was like, that's heavy. Right. And
a lot of people don't know.
A lot of people don't know the answer, but I started to learn the answer through podcasting. Mm. Because guys I was listening to, some gals like Rachel Hollis and Jenna Kutcher, but the guys I was listening to were like Ed Milet, some Grant Cardone. I was reading all of Grant's books first, and then I started to listen to Power Players, which was kind of like a breeding ground of me discovering Ed Milet, discovering Lewis House, because the people he had on his show were fantastic. And then what I would do is I searched their name and find that they also had their own shows. And then it went from there. And this is like 2016 before it was as booming as podcasting is in 2022 today. So I started to really like build up myself, my think, you know, like my belief in myself. I was listening to guys share stories about crashing and burning and coming back, multiple wins, multiple devastating moments that didn't stop them from achieving greatness. And I knew that there was something in me that was different. I saw myself in sales be able to be a top performer. I was never super gifted as an athlete, but sales kind of became my sport where I'd say, oh, the company wants me to write $75,000 in business this month. I'm going to do $150,000, right? Like I had that kind of, and then I would do it. And it was like this, I would imagine it's like a player who makes the Pro Bowl every year and they just like they don't care that they made it last year. They're not going to sit there and say, I made it in 2021. Nobody cares anymore. So like that just drove me.
I think there's something in The Last Dance where Michael Jordan, after they win, he's like, this is what it feels like to be a winner, guys. Now we need to do it next year. It's on to the next one. Like
on to the next one immediately.
Achievement
yeah.
oriented. That's a crazy amount of drive, brother.
And I want you to know that I'm aware right now that I've been rambling for basically 25 minutes and that you haven't gotten a word in. But I'm just, and stop me at any point, but I want people to know.
I'm kind of all right with it. My assumption is not everyone knows your story yet. So
yeah.
I love to give you the space to just dive deep, brother.
It's kind of like when someone meets me, like I want them to know if they see, you know, I think of kind of like the iceberg or something. Like there's stuff underneath. Like you don't know someone's backstory when you meet them. You only see that, you know, or the root. Let's use a tree because usually icebergs are thought of like as a negative thing. But like a tree, like you don't know the roots and stuff. So like that's what I love about podcasting is you get to know someone's roots a little bit better. So I appreciate you giving me the floor. And what ended up happening right then and there was I asked myself, who do I want to be? And I felt this heart tug, and I got real with God too. I was like, I need to know what my direction is in life. And I felt that I wanted to become an entrepreneur because I had this confidence, and I'm going to say I was maybe a little overly confident because I was so did well with other people's products and services that I just assumed, oh, that means I can start my own company and then I'm going to be able to sell my own products and services. But the thing is, I got into something that I was learning a lot about in a space that I didn't know everything about, like media and marketing. So I sold mattresses and I sold insurance and I sold gear, right? Music equipment. So I didn't have experience selling media and marketing, but I had experience understanding like what social media was all about, kind of through some of the earlier days, web design. I understood conceptually about it. But then what I would do is when I'd get a project, I'd end up hiring the right people to come on as like 1099 contractors. And then I realized after doing it for a while that that wasn't really lighting me up. So I kind of like created this thing and I started to offer all these services that I thought people wanted. Like, hey, Ben, I'm just going to make this up. Like, you have a bakery in Buffalo and like, you don't, you know, let's get your Facebook page like popping, man. Like bakeries do really well on Instagram and Facebook. And I just checked you out and not seen anything quite yet. So let me show you a couple examples, right? Or whatever that might look like. I wouldn't have actually handled it that way, but I'm just giving you an example of like quick. So now
baked goods look great on Instagram.
They look great.
I didn't disagree at all there.
I actually had and I still do work with a bakery, you know, that is kind of like a grandfathered in client. And it's something that like does really well. But my point is, that was the early days of like figuring out what product and service you have and what we're going to promote. But it wasn't necessarily lighting me up the way I thought it was. Like I had this company and I was like putting all my eggs in one basket kind of thing. So I was a little bit lost for a while and it showed the results because like I was so used to winning all the time. And then I didn't even know what winning was because I was the one picking the benchmark that I had to hit. And then it's like, how high do I set that? Like my first year I set the goals like so high that I couldn't even see them over the clouds. I'm like, where did I set these bars? So I got a little bit lost. I met Dave Mamano. So that's where he comes into the story. He was doing Avanti Entrepreneur Network, which I believed in once I heard his vision. I got introduced to him through a networking meeting. Like I said, I was doing a ton of networking. John Logel, a friend of mine, a friend of ours that we had a mutual connection and got me introduced to Dave. And then I saw that he had a podcast on. I'm like, dude, I love listening to these guys. And you got kind of a similar show. I always listen to entrepreneurial stuff. And we became friends. And I ended up producing about 50 episodes of the Avanti Entrepreneur Network podcast. After about 50 shows, this conference came among me where I felt like I wanted to do my own show. It's not that I didn't want to do his anymore, but I felt there was this gift of like another heart tug moment. Like I said, I had the one to start my business, and then I had another one in 2019, 2 years later, to start a podcast. And Dave and I continued to become friends. He ended up going a different direction. He rebranded his podcast later. And Avanti, I don't believe exists anymore in the same concept. I think he's rebranded that as well.
The podcast is the Gonzo Experience.
The Gonzo Experience, I know, is the name of it.
And the new network's Utopia.
Right. He's got Utopia out. So that's kind of what he's been doing. And then I realized Social Chameleon wasn't growing back then because I was trying to water all this other stuff. And if you stand there and try to water plants, you're not watering yourself and your own company, that's not going to grow. So I kind of had that realization. I think other people were helping me like realize that I needed to get grounded again and put out like I put eggs in the basket and then I didn't, you know, or I put seeds in a basket and I didn't water them. Right. So, so now podcasting is not something I just love listening to. I started to become part of it. I produced it. I loved working on the shows and then I loved doing my show. Similar to what you do, interview somebody and kind of get their backstory. And it lit me up and I just made so many friends. I have over 150 episodes where I've been doing this now. Every Monday I do Mic'd Up Mondays and it's audio and video. And I've made some of my closest connections and best friends in the last 3 years through podcasting on Mic'd Up. People who I can call on the phone, who I would have never had a chance to be able to talk to a couple of years ago, are now friends of mine, and some of them are clients of mine. Some of them are extremely, they're 10 steps ahead of where I'm looking to be in business too. So I have mentors. I literally have like coaches that one-on-one work with me that I've met through my podcast. Like I'll interview someone, I just really like them. They're a fantastic coach. I'll hire them. I'll be like, all right, I'm going to hire you to do this for me. And
Mike,
so
I just want to interject one thing I've done when I couldn't get someone on my podcast is I hired them and then I became their customer and then they came on my podcast. The podcast is such a great tool to talk to people that are just so many steps ahead of you. So I've quite literally, Mike, I've hired someone before they came on the show just to give them a hard enough nudge to come on. It's a great platform.
Yeah. And you don't know if that's going to happen, but a lot of times that friendship and partnership happens. And then you're like, it's a no brainer to get you on the show, right? Like, let's make that happen. And it's kind of an afterthought. So, yeah, that's great insight. And that's what was happening. My connections were growing and growing. And a lot of the people that I was interviewing started to ask me, hey, how did you launch your show? And then I got this crazy idea, like more people are asking me about podcasting than the other services I offer. And I started, they started to get stale. I kind of started to fall out of love with what I was doing, which is a problem. Because if you're not in love with what you're doing, I mean, it was like live or die kind of thing. I burned all the ships at the corporate. Like I was making good salaries and I just said, I'm just going to only make income on my business. So it was one of those things where if I'm not loving it now and the income stopped rolling in, I got to get real with myself. What am I going to do?
Right.
And I just knew I loved doing the podcast and it wouldn't matter if I was making $1 million a year or $10,000 a year. Like I was going to do the podcast no matter what, because it was my lifeblood into great people, great mindsets, lifelong friends. And then as the business started to do better and better, it was like, okay, this is almost like part of the foundation of it. Like the roots are growing within it through the podcast. And people would hire me to consult them on how do I launch? What do I do? What kind of equipment do I need? And then eventually, really quickly after that, it was like, dude, thank you for teaching me how to do this. I don't have time to do it. Can you just do it for me?
Right.
Of course, the answer was yes. And then I scaled that from like one client up to about a dozen. And it got to the point where I couldn't produce that many shows in a week by myself. I wasn't sleeping 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm sitting there staring at an editing software program that's just looking back at me. Sometimes I'm falling asleep in the chair, you know, kind of thing. And I just knew I needed help. So I hired my first intern. I had an assistant. Now I have a team of 3 audio video editors, Randall, got Nate and Todd on the team. And I have Gal as our show notes writer. She's fantastic. Comes with multiple decades of experience like in PR and marketing.
Love
it. And also in writing. Love and it. So she's fantastic. And then just onboarded a couple project managers now because my workload is still crazy. So Social Chameleon literally started from this little dream in my heart when I was going through some rough time, looked myself in the mirror, said, what do I want to do? And as a chameleon does, you kind of shape shift a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I always was led by following my heart. That compass has always been what's led me to where I'm at. And podcasting kind of found me, I guess, as I was a listener of some great influencers. And then I became someone who felt I had a show that I wanted to get out there and offer. What's cool about Mic'd Up, I'll just say this too, I'm looking back and reflecting in the moment, is I have some like, call them A-list people that do come on from time to time, which is fantastic. But I love the fact that I also give platforms to people who are like highly successful that maybe they just don't have a name yet. Like maybe they don't have 100,000 followers on Instagram, but they're probably making more money than most people do. Like they're kind of like the quiet, successful people that have these fantastic stories. And it's like, oh, I love giving them the light because now they're getting the moment that they deserve to have. That happens from time to time, but I've had, you know, like Olympic gold medalists on. I've had people who've won numerous business awards and accolades, influencers, a lot of mindset coaches come on that I'm like, I always say, I'm your first audience member. I'm learning from you directly, right? And so that's what happened with Social Chameleon. We started doing way more podcasts and a lot less of the other stuff. And I determined that a lot of my coaches, I think even Dave was telling me this in the beginning, is like, you're doing too much. You got to kind of pick your lane and rock and roll in your lane. And so I went back to my website and I took everything down except for podcasting. I rebranded it. I thought about changing the name to something quirky with like podcast in the title. Yeah. But then I thought to myself, I got the word social in our title, and that doesn't need to mean like social media.
No.
It could, like, podcasting is two people or more talking to each other. That's a social event and activity. So social chameleon totally makes sense. So I kept it, and then everybody still knew the brand and didn't, I didn't have to re-explain that I have a company and what it is. And I just said, we're a podcast agency. And then sometimes people would say, well, what kind of stuff do you work on? And then it was telling people for a while what we do. And now it's more about why we do it. Mm. And the examples of the kind of clients we actually choose to work with. And it's all positive minded stuff, which goes back to my original mission of like, I love inspiring people to be the best version of themselves, be brave and bold in pursuit of your dreams. I got my own hats out now from Mic'd Up that say BGBG, which is be great, be grateful.
Yeah.
I opened up a store, mic'dupmerch.com, which everything goes to a handful of local charities that I picked. Actually, some of them are international now, that give to people in need, women in need, anti-sex trafficking, Buffalo Gives, which is helping the, you know, the situation, you know, with, her name is slipping my mind right now. Oh my gosh. Do you know who I'm talking about? Buffalo Gives. Sure. No, her name is slipping my mind, but,
Twitter,
yeah, but we give to different organizations. We also give to Hope Rises, which is Kate Glazier. And her and I have worked together. So just, you know, when I see something that comes kind of across my desk, if you will, and I'm like, wow, that's a fantastic organization. What they're doing is incredible. We need to support it, right? So, but Buffalo Gives was helping give to Ukraine, is what I was trying to say. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So that's why I do like the merch. A lot of people are like, "Oh, like, why do you spend so much time on merch?" I'm like, because that's a give back. I don't make any money on it. Like, it's positive minded. I have a shirt that says "Be bold." Mm-hmm. One says "Be kind." Like, you know, if I'm wearing that and someone smiles because they see it, like, boom, there you go. That's exactly why I do it. And it's like encouraging people to have a positive mindset. So that's really what Mic'd Up has become. And then it kind of social chameleon built into it as well. And then in the last, I'd say 12 months from when we're doing this interview, it's blown up so much that now, like I said, I've got multiple project managers coming on to kind of help with everything, so I can eventually be able to take a deep breath and enjoy time with Isabel. And
yeah,
it's been wild. So that, I know we went super long, but that's fantastic. Really my story in a nutshell. So
do you have time for a few more in the rapid
fire? Hit me up with questions. And if anybody's still here listening, and thank you for listening to me ramble and share my story. But
how do people listen to Mic'd Up podcast? How do they consider working with you at Social Chameleon? How can we help you, and where can we go to hang out with you?
Yeah. Mic'd Up gets the most hits, similar to your show. I believe you're saying it's audio first. Mm-hmm. We do have a YouTube channel, and that's been getting a lot more hits lately. So I think people finally realize we're over there as well.
Cool.
So that's, you can check us out on YouTube. You can actually type in Mic'd Up, all one word, if you don't want to try to spelling my name.
Okay.
And Mic'd Up is MIKEDUP all together. And then you'll see that I tagged that and everything. So on YouTube, it's easy to find our videos. But if you go into like Apple or Spotify and you're looking for the show and you just start typing in Mic'd Up, you'll see Mic'd Up with Mike DeChocho, and that's me. And then Social Chameleon, our site is, and you can link it in the notes, is socialchameleon.us. And we serve all across the, you know, the map in the US. And again, we're an agency that does everything from audio production, audio and video. We also help you with guest sourcing, getting people on your show, the whole launching process of a podcast, and then the maintenance process. Mm. So our slogan, we stand behind it, is you press record, we do the rest.
Love it.
Her name came to my mind, Lydia Dominic from Buffalo Gives.
Lydia Dominic.
She's fantastic. Yeah.
So happy that she came to your mind.
I could picture her in my head, but her name I knew was not coming.
Well, hey, shout out to Lydia.
Yeah.
One more question. how would someone know that they like what I might be interested in starting a podcast? How would someone know that a podcast is a good route for them and something that you would recommend they start?
Yeah, that's a great question. The number one thing I would say is that with podcasting, if it's connected to your heart and a bigger purpose and mission that you're going to do no matter what, and monetizing it may happen, but also monetizing it may not happen for a long time, and you're still cool with it, then I think you're at least starting from the right spot. I think the mistake people make is, oh, everybody's doing podcasting, so I'm just going to do it because I think more people will like click on my website and buy my widgets and my products and my services and whatever. And if that's why you're doing it, you will burn out after about 8 to 15 episodes. There's a cliff.
Yeah.
And that's the cliff where a lot of podcasters die on. And it's because of that reason. They're like, oh, I put so much time and effort into it and I'm not getting anywhere. And I get people, that's a lot of people who hit me up. And I'm like, before we talk about working on your show, we got to figure out why are you doing your show? And a lot of times I realize people aren't even bought in on what it is. And it's like, if you're not bought in on it, who's going to want to listen to your show, right? So the number one thing I can say that's important is consistency. Once you're bought in and you know what you want to do, be consistent about when you're going to release, have a game plan. So how are you going to, you know, if you're doing it all yourself on day one, where are you going to get your guests from, right? And how are you going to reach out to them? Have some kind of platform and system down, create a spreadsheet and actually have like a prospect list and a scheduled list. And then once episodes come out, you start to color code everything. I'm a little bit crazy, but that's one of the things we do at Social Chameleon is we actually take care of your systems so you don't have to worry about all that.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about color coding. You guys handle everything. I just come on the mic and talk to great people.
Exactly. And so so I'd say those kind of three things is like follow your heart on understand why you're doing your show. Number two, consistency. And then systems are huge, right? And the fourth piece is really like the expertise side of it. So know that if you're, let's say you're a great keynote speaker, you have a book out, you're a fantastic educator, but you've never edited a day in your life in, you know, Adobe, and you don't know how to start a YouTube channel and make it look good. Sure. So that's fine. That just means that that's not what your expertise is, and that's not really what you're supposed to be spending your time doing, right?
Right.
So most people, when they find out that podcasting is truly it's like a part-time job, find people that you can be resourceful for. Now, if you're like, hey, I want to start and I have no budget, you can still, if you study it and watch a lot of YouTube videos, you can YouTube your way through making it sound good at about a $200 budget. And I've helped people hired me, pay me a couple $100 to coach them on how to do it. And then they just do it themselves. And then 6 months later, they'll call me up and say, all right, I'm ready for you guys to do it. But at least they got started.
Right.
Because the number one thing that people make a mistake in is they talk themselves out of it. Right. So that's what I would say. Like the key things are right in front of you there. If anybody would love to just have a free 15-30 minute call with me just to share your vision, like you're super excited right now listening to this, and you're like, dude, I want to talk to you, Mike, and tell me, I'm not going to sell you. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to listen to you. And I'm going to see if you're even somebody who would be a right fit for Social Chameleon, you know, second. And I just love giving people some free pointers. It's not like every time I give someone advice, I'm charging them for it. I'll just point people in the right direction and make good connections. And a lot of times those people are the ones who come back to me because they trusted me all the way through it. And then they just get to a snag where they actually need us. Some people don't need us. They just keep doing it themselves because they have this crazy desire like we do to edit. But now a lot of people don't like the tedious editing and stuff like that. So they leave post-production to us. And that's what we're here for.
How do you recommend someone get on one of those short consultation calls, we'll say it. It's not a sales call. It's you're basically their therapist on podcasting.
Yeah, just
how
listening.
Does someone book one of those calls?
Go to socialchameleon.us. We'll put that in the show notes for them. And then they click on it and there's a free call or discovery call. And it's with me directly right now. So get in while it's still me, because eventually I'm gonna have somebody that's doing that, and I'm not gonna be on every call. But right now you still get me. So take advantage of it.
bro. I love it. I know we're both on a time crunch. Do you have time for the rapid fire round? It's real quick. If not, we'll
Let's do it. Let's do it. I can be a little bit late for dinner. Let's do it.
Dude, I'm cooking dinner, so we're in the same scenario with that. So I often start off with coffee or tea.
Oh, coffee all day, every day. Black beer, coffee.
Black coffee. Beer or wine?
Today it's wine.
Today it's wine. Give me three podcasts that you're listening to right now.
Okay. Ed Milet's show, which I believe he just calls it the Ed Milet Show. Yep. School Greatness with Lewis House. And I've also been listening to, and I don't even know the name of it, isn't that bad? Rick Rubin, who's the producer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers and a lot of my favorite bands. He has a cool show where he'll like interview his artists and he learns stuff about them that he never knew. Like he's worked with the Peppers for like 30 years and he's still like getting new information from them. And I was just listening to it the other day actually, and it was super entertaining. So most of them are business and entrepreneurial mindset, but every once in a while I like to hit an entertainment. I also like to listen to Conan. So there's a bonus one for you.
Love it. Love it. Well, let's do a music question. So, any favorite drummers?
Ooh, number one, John Bonham, Led Zeppelin.
John Bonham, love it. Yeah. Final question. I'm looking forward to you continuing to expand, grow your team. But you tell me, you tell us, what do you envision the future of Social Chameleon? What is the North Star that you're going towards right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to be that company that when you think about launching a podcast and you're listening to a podcast, you see the logo, the little logo in the corner, the SC, and you know, like that's produced by Social Chameleon. Kind of like how Barstool, they have that whole thing where there's a branded thing and all these different brands and influencer are going to Barstool. Social Chameleon is going to be where you're going to see like positive minded entrepreneurs, keynote speakers. You go to listen to their show, you're not going to be surprised that there's that SC in the corner because it's someone who's like a Dr. Joe Dispenza, Lewis House, like that kind of mic'd up, Ben Albert, you know, the positive minded guys out in the world and gals. You know, like we just launched a show called Menopause Made Easy. Like we're that's, you know, but it's something that's helping people out. And anything that helps and serves, we're interested in working with it. So that's where I see us going on a big scale is where, you know, when you think about professional podcasts, it's going to be similar to when you think about turning on the TV. You have NBC, ABC, Fox, TBS, and podcasting. You have, you know, a couple that come to mind, but Social Chameleon will be a household name. It's not even like from a cocky or confidence thing. It's just more so knowing that like that capability is out there. There's so many people every day launching podcasts with needing directional help and needing gear and needing help with learning how to use it and also the post-production side of it. And then the distribution systems and time side of it. We take care of all that. It's like we offer a service that I know people need. And now there's just millions and millions all the time coming out. You know, when I started, I think there was like 2.5 million podcasts. I'm going to Google it after this to see how many there are now, because I'm sure it's probably tripled.
A lot.
You know, do I believe that everybody will and needs to have a podcast? No, I don't think it's for everybody. Like it has to be, like I said, in your heart, if you feel a show makes sense for you, and it doesn't have to be an interview show. Like if you want to just talk 10 minutes every day about a new action figure and that's your thing, cool. If you want to give business insights and you do it, you know, 5-minute episodes daily, that could be your platform. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Me, I love to extract the stories of my guests. I do not talk this much on Mic'd Up. I kind of took the platform today where you wanted to learn about me, and I appreciate you giving me the stage. But yeah, that's what I feel about podcasting. I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. It's not going away. And we love working in that space. And why, if you're in something, why just be one of many, you know, doing it just to do it? Like we're looking to be world class. And so that's what I see for us.
World class, baby. Mike, I appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. I'm going to let you close. You've got the BGBG on your hat here. Mm. Tell the listeners again what that stands for.
Yeah, guys, thank you for being with us here to the end. You know what to do. Be great and be grateful. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.